Join the Nation Recovery. It's a podcast dedicated to you, those in recovery, those looking for a positive message, and anyone needing a place of comfort. Join the Nation will bring you stories from people in recovery, the loved ones who are offering support, and how they're using their newfound freedom to help others along their journey. Each of us has a story. Our words can inspire, and this is your platform to shine the light of hope, strength, and courage. So welcome to the Nation. Here's your host, Stuart Michelson.
Thank you, Kristen, for that lovely introduction. As Ms. Walker stated, my name is Stuart Michelson, and welcome to Join the Nation Recovery. You can hear us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and the Mental Health News Radio Network. I hope you'll tune into the show as my guests and I discuss recovery and the lessons we've learned along our journey. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast and leave me a 5-star review. It will be my pleasure to read those on subsequent shows. Today on the show, we've got my friend Christopher Dickey. Christopher is the author, brain behind Hope Dealer 365. A native son from the great state of Arkansas, he graduated from the University of Arkansas with a Master's of Science, a doctorate in education specializing in adult and lifetime learning. His business background has kept him grounded with the university, as well as he is vice president of the Wolf Street Board Foundation. Finally, Christopher has a new project on the horizon, which I know he's going to want to share with us today. My friends, let me introduce you to Christopher. Morning, Christopher.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
It's my pleasure, and I thank you for joining the Nation. It is a project of mine. It is something that I've been working on for quite some time. And it is something that we are a large group of people. Actually, in the United States, there are 22 million people in long-term recovery, even a larger number in active addiction. And we need to get one person at a time. Each person, each one of us has to join together, get somebody and find somebody and help them along their journey. Something that you and I have talked about offline. So that's what this is all about.
And, well, you've heard the story about the starfish. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't. Go ahead.
It's a grandfather and his grandson are walking on the beach, and the little boy runs ahead and he's throwing these starfish. There's a whole bunch of starfish on the shore. They've washed up, and he's throwing them back into the ocean. And the grandfather comes up and says, "There's way too many. You can't save them all." And the little boy looks up at his grandfather and throws one in the water and says, "I made a difference to that one." So when you're talking about the one at a time, that's so important that you know, we focus on the individuals that are asking for help, and that we make it a point to be there for them and meet them where they're at when they're ready to take that step into recovery.
100%. You know, I've got a couple of sponsees who, you know, have unfortunately had relapses. And what we usually say in our business, I use that term like that, is that relapse, I always say to people that a slip is not a failure. It's just a reminder to keep coming back. And that's what you've got to do. You got to keep coming back. You know, it's all part of the journey, and this is a very long journey. Your journey started how long ago?
Well, my journey into recovery started when I went to inpatient treatment back in 2001. And that's where, you know, I made that beginning. That I went in there thinking that everybody was at fault, the world was against me, and I came out of there with the idea that there's something else that exists besides this life that I've been leading, you know, that it's not completely hopeless, that that there are people out there that are willing to help me if I'm willing to help myself. I wasn't willing to, at that time, submit to the process yet. I still had to try my own way and spent the next 6 years doing that until I figured out that, you know, I've got to do it how they suggest. I mean, I got to really trust these people that are trying to help me and just try to forget everything I think I know and forget everything, all of my plans and designs, and just put it on these people that want to help me and take their suggestions. And 2007 is when is my sobriety date. And so I've been taking suggestions ever since.
Well, perfect. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You know, I always tell people, you know, step one is paramount. It's the first step. You know, you're powerless over alcohol or substances in your life. Your life has become unmanageable until you give yourself up, until you decide that, hey, my life is unmanageable. I don't want to live this way anymore. You know, it's not going to work for you. You've got to throw out the old playbook, the playbook that we've all used before. It's like, well, I can do this. Okay, I can stop. Your mind is a very, very impressionable tool, but it's also, more than anything else, it's a muscle. And the muscle, if you exercise it properly and you exercise it continuously, it'll eventually remember. And, you know, because they say that it takes 21 days to create a habit. Well, 21 days, if you continue, like I know some inpatient programs we have here in Montreal, they're 21 or 28 day programs. Well, if you can do something for 21 days and then get the support afterwards, because that's the other important part, which we'll get into in a little bit. So the other important part is that, you know, once you've left your inpatient program, well, you're left to your own means, unless you're going to have a resource. And that's what Join the Nation is about. It's a resource. It's a tool. I can't help everybody. You can't help everybody. But at least people will know we are there for them. And if we're there for them and they can feel the love that we have, well, maybe they'll decide, you know what, let me speak to my friend Chris at 365 and let's see if he can give me a hand.
Absolutely. And what you're talking about, I had a rough time figuring out if I'm an alcoholic or an addict or whatever. You know, I think a lot of new people in recovery go through this. And how it happened for me, I'm sitting in my assessment getting ready to go to inpatient, and I'm saying, I don't know what kind of treatment I need. I'm at that point, if I was being honest, which I wasn't, I would have said I was a garbage can for drugs and alcohol. I mean, anything that there is on the table, I'm taking. But the counselor looked at me and said, well, our program for alcoholism is 21 days, and then our program for drug addiction is 28 days. And I said, I'm an alcoholic, because that was a shorter time, right? You know, but I don't, it doesn't really matter to me once someone comes into the program. I want to be there and available to help them. I don't care what brought them there. We'll figure that out and, you know, overcome whatever there is. I mean, that's the cool thing about being in recovery. The recovery community can help me overcome anything. All I've got to do is reach out. And still, a decade later, I am doing that. It's a part of my life that when I need help, it's okay for me to ask for help. You know, I've given myself permission to do that.
100%. Well, let's start this off here. I know I sent you some questions, and I wanted to discuss, get into that as well as we delve into our questions here that I have, we can get into our discussion. Question number one was, tell us how your life is today. Take us into your normal daily routine, including your recovery.
Yeah, so life is a lot different. Everything I'm about to tell you did not exist. I came to Arkansas with a suitcase full of clothes and a criminal record. That's all I had. And I was living in Oregon and decided that I was going to do one of those geographicals that I needed to just get away and figure things out. Well, I went on a one-way Greyhound ride down to Miami, and that was a horrible idea, but it ended up being a turning point and got me to Arkansas where I had some family. And so ended up getting sober in 2007 in Arkansas. And one of the cool things is in Little Rock, there's a rich history of recovery. And I absolutely love it. There's so many people that are, like you said, that are thriving in recovery. And so I tap into that every day. My life is tangled in the recovery community. And that's not by accident. There's a guy that taught me that we recover on purpose, and that recovery is in our feet. And so each day I make an effort to go tangle myself up in people that are living in recovery. I love the recovery community. It's the central feature of my life. If you came over to my house, Stuart, and you flipped up everything and turned it over and would say property, of recovery, right? It would say property of the recovery community that, you know, because everything that I have today is a result of loving and caring people that weren't afraid to tell me the truth about myself. One of the things I do, I pray and meditate. That's a consistent deal in my life. And then another thing, I'm present in my wife's life. I'm present in my daughter's life. And I show up to school events. I remember early on in recovery, I wanted to be a part of the conversation so bad. You know, we talk about like meetings after the meetings, and I would go up to people and I'd hear them talking about their kids and taking them to soccer practice or karate class. I hear about, you know, going to the shopping for some kind of home remodeling project. None of that stuff existed for me. I'm just like, I wanted to be a part of the conversation so bad. I'm like, have you guys ever huffed paint? I didn't know anything about life, you know, and what went on. I mean, everything revolved around using and drinking and the getting of the drugs and alcohol. And so over time, I've been able to, you know, build this life that is worth living. And, you know, recovery just continues to get better. My life continues to get better. It doesn't make any sense. Every year on my my sober birthday, I'm like, it can't get any better. You know, I've reached the pinnacle, but it does. It continues to get better. And as long as I continue to show up and show up for the newcomers that are entering the recovery, the pathway to the recovery community, I don't know, man. I'm just having a blast living and helping others find their path too.
Well, it's you know, listen, I can see the authenticity and the gratefulness that you have with being sober, whether it be from alcohol or from substances. You know, I know with me, you know, I'm going on, well, I'll be the 25th of September is the third year in the program. And, the thing is, I don't even remember myself from 3 years ago. I mean, I can even tell you, you know, I have this discussion with my girlfriend all the time. I don't even remember myself from last October. You know, I've done a lot of work, and the work is what has to be done, because you and I are resources, and that's why you and I are here today. We're talking about our journey, and we are resources. But we can't do the work. We're doing our own work for ourselves. We can't do it for somebody else. We got it. You've got to believe as a human being, our sponsees and those that are out there, you've got to believe that you can make a difference. And the way you make your difference is just by saying, hey, Chris, I need help. Can you give me a helping hand? That's what we need. That's what we need.
We're walking the road, man, and we're walking the road. And then when someone comes up to the side of the road with us and says, hey, I want to help, all we do is say, hey, come start stepping with us. Join the link, right? That's what I love about it. I'm so glad that you didn't do it for me, because I wouldn't have the things in my life. I always tell people that I can't want your sobriety more than you want it for yourself. You know, I mean, I can give you suggestions. I can give you the sales pitch of what life can be like. But for you to actually experience that, you're going to have to do the work. And that's what I mean by when I was talking about, I was taught that recovery is in my feet and it's in the actions that we take. There's more to being sober than being sober, right? Mm-hmm. When I came out of inpatient treatment back into my mom's life, it was a disaster. You're talking about that extended stay, you know, 21 days wasn't enough. And we just didn't know the resources that existed. I'm sure there were sober living environments. I'm sure there was outpatient treatment, but we didn't know that existed. And so I went back into my mom's apartment. And have you heard that, you know, if you sober up a drunken horse thief, what do you got? A sober horse thief?
Yeah.
So I wasn't changing. I'm just sitting back there thinking that I've done something. I've got 21 days sober and I've accomplished something, but I'm not cleaning up after myself. I'm not doing these. I'm not taking care of myself. I'm not going to get a job. And my mom confronts me on this one day, and it blows up into this big fight. And I'm like, what do you want from me, Mom? I'm a, you know, I'm sober now. And just this bad attitude still. Mm-hmm. And that's not what sobriety is.
No.
Sobriety is way more than a clean urine analysis. I mean,
I always like that one.
Yeah, I've got to do the footwork, man. There's one thing I can go up to my mom and say, hey, I need help. And she's going to be like, good. I'm so glad that you're getting help for yourself. But then there's going to come a time when she's starting to think, when is he going to pay me back that $5,000 he borrowed from me? You know, and I think that I own some of that stigma that exists because when I was not willing to change and do the footwork, you know, when I'm just being sober and still having that bad attitude and bad behavior, you know, there's a time where I've got to, you know, start to make restitution for that stuff. And then luckily there's a process that I can do that we call the amends process. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of alleviates all that stuff. I mean, I get to own it. I get to look the world in the eye. I don't have to shuck and jive around anymore after I make those amends to people. I become a different person. I stop blaming. I stop being a victim.
Well, I think the point you've also hit very strongly is step four. Because what you've done in essence is you're taking a moral view of yourself. But I always say to people, it's a brutal look at yourself because you've got to be brutally honest. That's what people don't understand is that if you're not brutally honest with yourself, you can't be honest with anybody else. Because I'm the only person that I have to make, you know, I got to make amends to me first. And when I make amends to me, then I'm able to make amends to everyone else. And I, like what you were saying about restitution, and with your mom, you know, it's like, you know, getting into that battle with your mom. It's like, well, you know, it's not so much, yeah, okay, you got sober. Fine. You're 21 days sober. You're 30 days sober, but like, you're not anywhere. You have no experience in sobriety. All you do, like some people, my chair at my homeroom, who's an interventionist, he's one of the renowned interventionists in North America. He said, you know, if you think you're sober after 30 days, forget about it. You haven't eaten enough shit sandwiches, is what he said. You got to eat the shit sandwiches in order to get sober and to actually understand what sobriety is all about.
Yeah, man, it's tough. It's tough getting sober. It's tough learning how to stay sober. But the cool thing is, like I said, we're stepping together. We're hand in hand in our recovery community. And there's nothing else like it, man.
Perfect. We talked about already that your sobriety date is November 19th, right? 2007. Okay. You took yourself a little bit of time to get there. You started in 2001. You figured, but by the time 2007 arrived, you figured, okay, now I finally got, I figured I understand this. I was doing it I was short circuiting everything, but now I got it the right way.
I was whooped.
Okay. There you go. In other words, you would go to any lengths to get what I have.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Good. What life moment, if there was one moment that helped you or got you to sobriety and to recovery, like what was that defining moment that said, you know what, I'm done. This is over. It's finished. I've, like you said, I'm whooped and I got to figure out the other side of this equation.
This has always been interesting for me to think about because if someone's from the outside looking in, they would have thought the 14 times I was arrested in 1 year would have been enough to say, okay, this guy needs to change. Or when I overdosed, some passerby saw me with my car door open. I was convulsing in a full-blown overdose. And, you know, when I got out of the hospital 2 days later, I was looking for the same poison that put me there. Why didn't that change me? Why didn't that want, I mean, you know, I was still in control. That's why. And even when I went to inpatient treatment right after that, you know, getting out and going over that next 6 years, I was really battling the control, you know, and learning that there were other things at play that separated me from my recovery group. You know, I didn't understand fully on how resentments and, you know, fear disconnected me, and I placed conditions on my sobriety. Like, if this happens, then I'm done. If I lose my mom, if I lose my dad, if I don't get this job promotion, then I don't know how to do it. So I wasn't fully leaning into the program. I wasn't willing to do that. So when different life situations happen, I would, just say, screw it, and I'm leaving. And in 2007, it wasn't really anything that was as bad as some of those other places, except for the spiritual bankruptcy that I felt. Mm-hmm. That, I've burned every bridge that I've ever had. I mean, every relationship. So that bottom was where I was completely hopeless. And I say that knowing I was hopeless, knowing that the recovery community existed. I've been in the recovery community and it didn't work. That's where my mind was, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't work. And so I was at that jumping off point. Like, I can't go on this way, and I can't go on this way. I'm done. I don't know. And so in spite of what I thought the recovery community was all about at that point, I went back and I gave it one more shot, and it worked in spite of what I thought. Cause I didn't think it worked, but I was going to do, I mean, I didn't have anywhere else to go. It was the last house on the block.
Well, last house. Well, I like your analogy in the sense that, I've been to point A and I burnt everything there. I've been to point B and I burnt everything there. So it's like, obviously in your 6 years, in essence of off and on, you finally figured out that, you know what, I've been trying to do this all by myself and I can't do it by myself. And there's a huge community out there. You know what, let me give it one more shot and hopefully I will get it. But are you a spiritual man?
Yeah. One more point, like all of those bottoms before had a trap door in it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like they were bottoms. They suck. Those consequences were awful. But I didn't know I had a trap door where I could go even further, right? And then I finally got to that point. I don't want to make that. Yeah, I'm a spiritual in the sense that my favorite definition of spirituality is reality. Okay. That I'm real today. And you mentioned that I'm able to be brutally honest with myself in order for me to be objective, right? There are certain things that I don't want to let go of that, sometimes I get caught up in these behaviors and someone will mention something to me and I'm like, I don't want to let this go. I like this. For instance, I'll just share this. I was playing softball, adult softball. And when I would go out there, they'd be drinking. And this was about, 4 years into my sobriety. And I was telling one of my recovery friends about me going out there and playing softball. And he said, are you sure that's a good idea with all that drinking going on? And I walked away from there thinking I was mad at him. Like, I didn't want to get, cause he was right, but I didn't want to admit that he was right yet. So I was walking away thinking, I don't want to give up softball. And so something simple like that, this is my life today. Like, I trusted him that he could see something that I couldn't, and I stopped playing. Mm-hmm. I gave that up, and I didn't want to. I was angry, and then once I did give it up, a couple of weeks later, I realized that, yeah, I was playing with fire. And so I'm grateful for other people that are able to be honest with me that, that can shed light onto something that I can't see yet. Mm-hmm. But once I was able to be honest with myself, I was real. And I said, okay, that this probably will end up being a problem. And plus I realized that I started getting a bad attitude. I started, when I was hanging out with that crowd again and all that stuff. So, didn't realize that I was headed for trouble. Someone else did. They were honest with me. And then I was able to be honest with myself. I think that's the definition of spirituality at its core, that I was able to be real with myself, and be in reality. Cause I always want to, I always want to minimize, justify, rationalize, and it's kind of like that fantasy world, right?
Right. Well, I got you on that. But in essence, you think or you felt that perhaps the alcohol in within your the community you were hanging with, i.e. the softball community, could have posed a problem to you.
Well, if I'm powerless, I've got to act powerless, right? Okay. If I'm saying that I'm an alcoholic, that means that I'm powerless, that that it suggests I can't control the drink. I don't have the power of choice once I ingest it. And if I hang around it long enough, mm-hmm. there's going to be a time where I'm at a weak point.
Sure. I got you.
And I know that, I mean, I get into debates sometimes with others that, you know, that's a radical view, but I've been doing this for a decade now without putting any kind of mood altering chemicals in my body. And I'm having a fun time doing that. And I don't want to rock the boat. So I treat it like, you know, grizzly bears. You know, I'm powerless over grizzly bears. That's an easy thing for me to accept. I'll go hang out with grizzly bears. They're going to maul my ass up, you know, and kind of like that. So I don't know.
But let me ask you a different, because I recently saw a photo of you. You were at a gala event.
Yeah.
A little while back. And I'm assuming there was alcohol flowing at that party.
So that was a Wolf Street Foundation.
Oh, okay.
But that's a great point. Great question. I don't go to anywhere where the primary purpose of the event is to drink.
Okay.
And if I go to, I love going to concerts. I love going to ball games. I always take a friend in recovery or my wife, and do it that way. Because I'm not going to escape the presence of alcohol. I mean, I go out to dinner all the time and there's open bars at all these restaurants. So the difference between doing that and me going and playing softball is their primary purpose for going and playing softball was to get out of the house and drink.
Okay.
And it was kind of like a party out there for them. And I was out there trying to convince myself that we're out here playing and it's the, you know, game 7 of the World Series, right? And I was taking it way too serious and I was in danger. When I go to baseball games, I love baseball. I love football. I love live music. I take a friend. I mean, there's ways to do that. And the primary purpose of that event is not to drink.
Perfect. No, it was just a point that I was trying to make sure I got. Because like myself, I mean, I'll give you an example with me. 3 years ago, prior to really getting involved and getting started in this process, you know, I got into a situation. Well, listen, I got married. I got married on a lie. I wasn't truthful from the get go, and that was, you know, my alcoholism, you know, just took over. I mean, I went on my honeymoon. I went on a cruise, and you know, I was drinking in the bathroom. Drinking, you know, I was finding every place to drink, even though my ex-wife didn't know that I was drinking, or didn't think I was drinking. I just went on a cruise with my girlfriend this past winter. And I've got two pictures, which I love to take. One of them is a picture of a shot because I work out. So I took a shot from the deck at 6 o'clock in the morning. So it's pitch black. And then I took it after I came back out at 7 and the light was the same picture. So you've probably heard of our good friend, Anna David, taking your darkness and making it to bring your light. Well, that's what it was for me. It was a transformation from A to B. And I see that's what the way it is with you. You know, you're a humble man who understands today your challenges with a substance or substances, and you've decided, listen, it's not for me. I don't need this. Me, I'm pretty happy and wonderful, and my life could not be further content than just being with myself, being with my family, being with my friends. And I don't need anything to make me happy because life makes me happy.
Yeah, I mean, life's an up and down roller coaster, and it's not always fun. I mean, it's painful. It's painful as hell sometimes. But the thing is, I don't have to do it alone, man. I've got these people in my life that care so much about me, and I'm able to walk through really difficult times. For instance, my father-in-law in 2015 was diagnosed with mesothelioma.
Okay.
That's a nasty lung cancer. And, you know, I stopped smoking in 2009. And shortly after that, he introduced me to long distance running. So we would run all over the place in these races and we would have so much fun. I loved this man. And he taught me a lot about life, love, and work ethic. And, mm-hmm. And so that was devastating when he got diagnosed. And and literally we had just run 3 miles together, and 8 months later, he couldn't even walk to his mailbox without his oxygen tank and being winded.
Wow.
And so it was just an incredible downward spiral. And guess what, man? I got to be there. I got to be present in his life as he was getting close to the end of his. Mm-hmm. That guy that was drunk and active addiction couldn't be there, wouldn't have been there, would have destroyed everything. And yes, it was one of the most painful times of my life, but I wasn't alone. And it, you want to talk about spiritual, man, that was something. I actually, one day I was over there at his house, and he had this little convertible Miata. It was a burnt orange Miata with black rims, and he loved that little sports car. And he comes walking into the room carrying his oxygen tank, and he really can't talk at that time. And we figure out that he wants to go for a ride. And so I got to take him. I stuffed him in the car with his oxygen tank. And we drove around the block and went and rode around the city for a little bit. And that ended up being the last ride that he ever got to take. He was bedridden after that. And, you know, you can't give me a title that's shiny enough. You can't pay me a salary that would replace
no.
me being able to be there for him and his at the end of his life. And I'll say one more thing. We were talking about the power of amends. There were times where, you know, I hurt him in my active addiction, and I hurt his daughter in active addiction. And I made amends to him years before, you know, that car ride. And one day I was getting ready to head back home to my house, and he was bedridden, and, you know, we were saying goodbye, and it ended up being that last goodbye. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready to leave, and he grabs me, and he you know, he forces this smile. And as a 33-year-old man, I laid down on his chest and cried, and he cried. And in that moment, we had nothing but love for each other, man. We had nothing but love. There was nothing that I was thinking about saying that I wished I could have. There was nothing that I could have done that would have made our relationship better. Our relationship was intact, and that was because of the recovery community in the program that showed me a new way of life, that I could be there for him. And man, I'm telling you, that is way more than a drink ever gave me or a drug ever gave me, man.
Well, 100%. And you know, it reminds me of a story. About one of the guys in my home group. And you know, his dad, when his dad passed away, you know, it's like he didn't, you know, he was drunk. He wasn't himself, and nobody relied on him, and nobody had any confidence in him. And then when his mom passed away, you know, he was so pleased that he'd been sober already for almost 3 years, and he was so proud that he could, you know, he could be there in the final moments with her, holding her hand, and being able to take care of all the responsibilities that unfortunately comes with death. You know, I know this for a fact. I've just put together my will, you know. I'm 51 years old. I don't expect it to happen, but you know, everything is a responsibility, you know? So, and he was just happy that he was able to be sober. He was able to see everybody. He was able to celebrate the life of his mother sober, which was, he could not have replaced anything with that sobriety. But, you know, listen, I feel for you, and you know, my condolences. I mean, I'm not sure how long this has been, but my condolences to you and your family, obviously. But I'm glad that you know, your sobriety, your eyes were wide open when this man unfortunately left the earth. Yeah. But you were able to spend those quality moments with him sober and understanding the man who he was.
Yeah, man, I mean, life's going to happen, and drinking hadn't been a part of my life in a long time. And, you know, there's going to be painful times that we go through life. And there's just, this is why I show up to be a part of the recovery community as much as I can, because people are going through some crazy experiences, and they're in watching them go through these things sober inspires me to continue to do this. You know, we talk about perseverance, and the best way I've ever heard that described is it's called stick-to-itiveness. You know, we stick. We're gonna continue to fight this thing. We're gonna continue to grow, and you know, that was in 2015 when he passed away. You know, there's still days where, you know, I get sad and then, you know, I'm able to think about him, and I can call my mother-in-law, I can call my wife and say that I'm sad and missing. And instead of stuffing those feelings and try to controlling it and whatever, I can, and there's relief in sharing that, because most likely they're probably missing him too. And we can share that again. And there's times when I go running today that I can feel him in the wind, you know, mm-hmm. and that's really a blessing.
Awesome. We've talked about obviously your journey. We've talked about parts of your personal. You know, we just finished a little bit of personal history with family. Where has your recovery taken you in terms of giving back to the community? Obviously, Hope 365 is one project that you're doing. I've seen on your LinkedIn page that you have another project that you've gotten yourself into, and I know my listeners will be more than happy to hear what's going on with that project.
Absolutely, man, and I think that I heard something a while back, givers get, and me, I was a taker. I took everything. I was a Hoover vacuum cleaner. I sucked everything good in people's lives. I mean, I was a tyrant walking around and in active addiction, and we all know that that, you know, addiction's a devastating illness. But I was taught that it doesn't have to be a debilitating illness, that I can create a life worth living. And then, so what you have taught me is that there's no other way I'd rather live than one through giving. Mm-hmm. And so I just love helping someone put their life back together. And when I was in high school, I didn't graduate high school. I had a 0.75 GPA. Surprise, surprise, you don't graduate with that. And my mom always said I was an over-underachiever. I really knew how to lose. And so a judge had ordered me to get a GED. So when I came down to Arkansas, at least I had a GED. I was able to get into college and have a really fantastic transformation. I got all the way through my doctoral coursework, and I'm at the point where I'm considered ABD, all but dissertation. And that's an incredible journey that I've been on, humbling, to say the least. And so I had been involved in academics and being in college administration for a lot of years and helping people on the side when I could. And a shift happened a couple of years ago when I joined the Wolf Street Foundation board. I got to see in the community what is going on in the treatment industry. I got to see what's going on in schools. I already knew kind of what was going on in the colleges because that's where I was working. But like the K through 12 system, I got to see more in the community how addiction is present. And really, I've been sober a lot of years, but I was in the, you know, kind of the programs bubble and not really opening my eyes up to anything else. And so that shift happened when I joined the Wolf Street Foundation and I started giving back in a more public way. I started, obviously there's an opioid crisis. We talked about in 2016, we lost over 64,000 Americans. And we don't talk about the year before very much, but there was over 50,000. And so over 100,000 people in 2 years from accidental overdose. Well, that really speaks to me because I'm an overdose survivor. And if I'm not doing my part by stepping out and sharing my hope, then I'm failing. And I think that we talk a lot about the crisis. We talk a lot about the epidemic. We talk a lot about how to try to figure out how to stop the hemorrhaging, stop the bleeding. And so I created Hope 365 to talk about when we stop the bleeding, what are we going to do with them? Well, let's talk about the recovery. There's the continuum part. Like, we got to continue. We can't just stop at the, you know, the bandage. And that's kind of what treatment, the concept of treatment is. Like 30 days and you go out and you're supposed to just, you know, be a productive member of society. Well, that's not the case. It takes a long time to put someone back together. And in any case, it did for me. And so Hope 365 is meant to share your recovery, that to provide hope for others, to inspire them to action, right? If the recovery program does one thing, I've always said, if it manufactures anything, it's hope for the hopeless. And so when I was at my bottom in my crisis, I listened to others who were where I was once, and they were sharing their experience, strength, and hope with me. And that gave me hope and inspired me to act differently. And so that's kind of the concept of Hope 365, in addition to my work on the Wolf Street Foundation Board, of being in outreach and trying to help the community make sense of all this. You know, we need the recovery community needs to show up to the general population that doesn't understand us. You know, I mean, there's a big gap in understanding that the recovery community can provide, because we've been there. We know what it's like, and we can shed insight into what is going on. And so another thing that I'm working on is natural state recovery centers. This is going to be unique to Arkansas. We have in central Arkansas, we have a couple of outpatient treatment centers, and they're doing a good job of providing treatment to people that are coming out of detox or out of inpatient treatment, and continuing the care with partial hospitalization day treatment or intensive outpatient, which is 3 hours a day for three times a week. Well, I see that, and I want to inject recovery into that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm creating an outpatient treatment center with industry professionals, but also who are in recovery themselves. I think that's critical to providing care, in my model anyway. And so what I'm doing with that, in addition to my outpatient treatment, is providing the option for sober living. I've got a house that holds a certain amount of beds that people can come into my program and know that they're going to be in a safe, sober living environment that's structured and disciplined. And then we provide transportation to and from their appointments, especially the outpatient piece of that. I'm really excited about it. That's coming soon. We're moving forward. We're getting licensed with the state. We're getting compliant for our journey with through the accreditation process. We're making a lot of leaps and bounds every day. We've got the office space. We're starting to build out on that. And we hope to start impacting people's lives soon.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because, like I said, I'd seen that on your LinkedIn profile. It is just amazing that someone that who's gone through so much and who's decided to obviously go switch over to the other side, and now is no longer a taker but a giver, is giving so much back to the community. Because it's, you know, it's one thing to you know, go to meetings, it's one thing to help sponsees, it's one thing to be involved in the community, but to take that large initiative, because this is not something small. Now we're talking about, like, you're not just impacting a person's life as a sponsee or some people's lives. You know, this isn't fellowship anymore, because that's what we're like, you know, AA movement, some of these movements, smart recovery, these are our fellowships. It's how you and I met. We met technically through the fellowship via Instagram, I believe is how we met. But now you're taking the giant leap and saying, you know what, I've learned my lesson. I want to give back, but I just don't want to give back in a personal, I want to give back to a huge community. I'm going to provide a location. I'm going to provide comfort to people who I know exactly what they're going through. And the state of Arkansas, and are you in Little Rock?
Yeah.
Well, the city of Little Rock couldn't have been better off than having an ambassador like yourself. And I applaud you. And I know that Join the Nation will applaud you in your efforts to you know, give back in such a huge way to the community.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And if this doesn't work, I mean, I may need a place to live. So I'm going to be calling you up.
Well, if you don't like mind.
Like you said, it is a big project and it's taken a lot of resources. It's not, I'm really blessed to have such a large force of advocates around here to help this project get up off the ground. And I'm looking forward to it. Yes, is it scary? Absolutely. But it's such a big need. It's such a big need. I didn't mention the other part. So we've got the outpatient treatment. We've got the housing. But we also have the Hope 365 piece that is driving life skills through there, like college exploration, career assessments, figuring out what these guys want to do, and then helping them attach, you know, a plan to go out and achieve those goals. And we're going to step with them. The phase one piece is, you know, focusing on building the foundation and personal recovery and getting them sustained in their own recovery. And then it's about building a life. And the second phase is about building the life worth living that keeps them from needing a drink, keeps them from, backtracking.
Excellent. And by the way, I mean, Montreal is a cold place in the winter. So if you don't mind coming up to having some snow, there's more than enough room up here. But I'm not necessarily sure you're going to want to come up to the snow of Montreal. It's a cold place, but I know for a fact, I feel it in my bones that this project will be successful. You will make it happen. The people that you're surrounded with, I know you're together as a group. You're going to make this project happen, and the people of Arkansas and the people of Little Rock are going to be so benefiting from a project such as this. And hopefully, it'll grow and grow, because the crisis that we live, as you spoke about before, it would be great to have it, you know, come to an end, you know, in the sense that, you know, you've got the president who's come out, you know, with national epidemic, and now you can see what's going on a little bit. They're putting some money to the project, but you know, unfortunately, education is the only way this is going to end, because people have to be educated. And in order to be educated, they need people like you, like me, like the millions of people like us, frontliners, who are working diligently to try and help one person at a time. Like we started off with, this is helping out one person at a time. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you heard me. Okay, so because you were nodding and I wasn't sure if you heard me. Let me ask you something. What was the best piece of advice you received when you began your journey?
Oh man, there's so many. I know you can probably appreciate this. When you're ready to be open to new information, it's like, there's nothing like when we call them God shots, you know, like aha moments, you know, like, oh, that makes sense. There's so many people that, you know, helped me along the way that would just give me these suggestions that really made sense for my life, like how I related to resentments and how I built resentments. And I'm like, I can't believe I was doing that. And, you know, like when you're seeing for the first time how you relate to the world. But there's this one time this guy sat me down, and I had literally like 2 weeks of sobriety, and I'm hurting. I'm in a lot of pain. And he said, Chris, it's really simple. You know, what this journey that we're on, it really is. And you're not going to always be in pain. But I do want you to remember this. He said, right now, today, you have 2 weeks sober. And he wrote down on a piece of paper, he said, remember this, be nice, is what he wrote. And he said, in 2 months from now, you're going to be in a different spot than you are right now. And he wrote down, be nice. And then he went and wrote 2 years, 20 years, be nice. I think that, you know, there's like a saying, if you want to attract bees, use honey or something like that. Be sweet. You know, there's obviously a time for being assertive and setting boundaries. But I've made a lot of great friends and people in my network with remembering that concept. I mean, why not? Just be nice. How hard is that? I got to be nice. I mean, that's made a big difference in my life. So I think that was a big turning point for me.
excellent point. And, you know, I've taken a course. I just recently become a certified life coach. And one of the things that we're taught is that when situations come towards you, you may not be able to control the situation, but there is one thing you can control, and it's your response to that situation. You can control your reaction. And, you know, like you said, be nice, you know, be humble, be generous, be grateful. Right.
We're in a place right now, it's so divisive if you really look at it. I mean, you go online and people are just being brutal with each other. And it's, you know, I want to bring something else to the table. I want to bring positivity to the atmosphere. You know, that I don't want to live live inside my body when it's all chaotic. I hate that.
Well, I can agree with you 100%. What's the best resource you could offer a new member as they begin their journey?
So assuming that they've already asked for help?
Yeah.
Keep coming back. Keep showing up. You know, that was like music to my ears. I hadn't been asked to come back anywhere in a long time. And when I came to the recovery program, they said, keep coming back. And I was like, that's different. You know, don't you know what I've done? And they said, we don't care. We love you, and let us love you till you can love yourself. And you talked about going to any lengths. You know, sometimes people are going to tell me things I don't want to hear, but I got to keep coming back. One of the things that I've done for myself is I've made meetings non-negotiable. I go to meetings whether I want to or not, whether whatever's going on, they're non-negotiable. I cannot, you know, debate that in my head. I've really made, you know, that a deadlock, if you will, that, you know, I just go. And that's been a constant for.
Do you go to physical meetings every day or every odd day?
Three or four times a week.
Okay. And the reason why I said that is because what other people don't realize is that there are communities out there on the internet. Some, you know, unfortunately, sometimes schedules don't allow it. Like my schedule doesn't always allow it. I'm in the automobile industry where I work 9 to 9 every night. So, you know, and I've met, and you've known some of the people that I've met, you know, Anna David was one of them. You know, there's Omar Pinto. He has the Share podcast. And I've met different community groups whereby it's just a very large meeting where you it's a fellowship where you speak your mind in a closed community. And you're able to, you know, to hear from other people, hear their stories. Because, you know, I wrote a piece, a recent blog, I wrote a piece where, you remember the show Cheers?
Yeah.
Where everybody knows your name, right? Well, one part of the line is, I want to go where I can see my troubles are all the same. I want to go where everybody knows my name. So the bar, just funny, the bar, the analogy is, everybody hears your troubles. Well, it's the same thing. I go to a lot of internet meetings just because I don't have all the time. I still go to my meetings. I still go to my home group. I always talk about Tuesday night is my night. It's like you said, a non-negotiable. But I try and make sure. And what I want my listeners to know is that there are resources as well out there that can be of help to you on the internet, where you can get into a community and you can discuss privately, because they're closed communities, where you can discuss privately your issues, and you can hear the same thing from other people. It's a fellowship style atmosphere, which is what AA or Smart Recovery or Refuge Recovery, all these avenues are. Which is, you know, like you said, you attend them three or four times a week.
Whatever works, man. Like I said, just keep showing up.
Keep showing up. Last but not least, I talked to you offline, and I'm going to speak to you now about it. Join the Nation. As I told you, Join the Nation is a project of mine where I'm trying to get one more person involved. One more person who's hurting, get them into the system. Let them be part of the fellowship. Let them understand what they feel, I've felt. What they're living, I've lived. I've walked those shoes, and I just want to be able to show you how my shoe, I can help you walk the same shoes that I walk. If you want what I have, And so Join the Nation, what I'm trying now is a challenge. And I'm going to be challenging a lot of people. And I challenge you, Chris. What I'm looking for is volunteers right now, because the challenge is going to happen during Recovery Month. Recovery Month is in September. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for people to be able to be leaders in their community. Like I said, just one person. You don't need, I'm not looking to get to, you know, thousands of people. I mean, it's going to build all by itself, just one person. And I'm just wondering if you, Christopher Dickey, Hope 365, if you'll join the challenge of join the Nation Recovery. You'll find us one person in your community who needs the help, and gets them on board.
You've heard it right here. Join the Nation. I accept the challenge. Hope 365 is stepping up and going to meet your goal, man.
I thank you. I thank you very much. It's been something I've been thinking of for quite some time. Like you, it's incredible the amount of people that need our help, and it's not difficult. Just get out there, lend your hand out there, put your hand out there. And for somebody who's a listener or somebody who's looking for that help, you've got a friend in Little Rock, you've got a friend in the state of Arkansas, you got a friend here in Montreal, and we're out there working diligently each and every day, trying to help people like yourselves.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. Just one second. We're going to end this here by thanking you, Chris, for being on the show today. Thanking Hope 365 for all the work they've done. Thanking Natural State Recovery for the work they're going to do for the state of Arkansas and the city of Little Rock. And if I can be of any help to you in the future, except for if you need a place to stay, if I can be of any help for you in the future, please let us know. Join the Nation. We'll be more than happy to help you out. And with that, guys, we are going to sign off today, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening in to Join the Nation Recovery. I hope you've been inspired to ask for help, support someone in recovery, or simply learn valuable lessons from our stories. Join the Nation is brought to you on the Mental Health News Radio Network. Listen in next time as our guests continue to shine a bright light along their journey. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, you can reach out to us at askmeformyhelp.com, and that's askme at the number 4, myhelp.com. We'd love to hear your story and shine your light for our listeners. Don't forget to visit us at jointhenationrecoveryradio.com. Until we meet again, have an awesome day wherever you may be. The opinions on this show are solely those of the hosts and their guest. Join the Nation neither endorses or supports any one path of recovery. We support paths that lead to a healthy and sober life. Thanks for joining us.